Welcome to Women Who Fights podcast. We empower female fighters to take full agency over their training. Our goal is to celebrate and inspire others with the incredible action women and allies are taking to level the playing field. We talk to experts, uncover prejudice, and champion what's driving our progress.
Today, we have with us the international boxer, cognitive behavior therapist, coach Kathy, which holds women empowerment workshops and gives speeches and presentations. She promotes equality for women in everything that she does.
Kathy was the second woman in the UK to receive a professional boxing license in 1998, and as a result, her opponents had to be shipped in from overseas. She's persevered through so much adversity, with doors constantly being shut in her face, and yet she managed to flourish, becoming ranked third in the world and British and European champion.
Who better to talk to us about what it was like to be a female boxer 20 years ago and how it has evolved, if it has evolved enough, and what needs to change still. So we wanted to talk to you specifically about leadership as a woman, holding space, which is often dominated by men. But first, we would love to know a little bit more about you, about your background. So tell us, first of all, how did you first come to boxing? What was the thing that made you realize you wanted to do it in the first place?
So we've got 2 hours, right? So as I was growing up as a child, I just didn't have any confidence, any self-esteem, any worth. And I was adopted when I was a baby. It was back in the 70s where if you were pregnant outside of wedlock, you were taken away, put in a convent, and then had to give your baby away. So it's a sort of quite a famous movie called Magdalene Sisters and Philomena, who explain the sort of the 70s sort of backdrop of adoption and the Catholic religion. So I was from, that was my sort of like bringing up. So I was given to this, I was put in an orphanage and I was given to this couple, and they brought me up very well. But, you know, you always feel like, I always felt I never belonged anywhere. I didn't have any self-worth. I'm constantly feeling I had to prove myself all of the time. So unfortunately, I met someone when I was 15 who played on that lack of confidence and that lack of self-esteem. And I got into quite a heavy abusive relationship at 15 years old. He was much older than me. I think he was about 9 years older than me. He really played on that. So I was in this relationship with this guy for over 2 years, and when I was going through lots of abuse, he would beat me up. I'd go home and I didn't tell my mum and dad because I was scared they were going to give me away, because obviously I didn't want to bring shame onto the family. So I went through this sort of silent, abusive relationship, you know, when I didn't know any different. I didn't know how relationships were supposed to be. I was too young. So I left home to escape the relationship because it got really bad, and he ended up raping me quite badly when I was 16. So I started to study photography and at Newcastle University. Then I changed to Cheltenham and Gloucester to sort of just escape everything, because I was just, I need to get away, because he was waiting for me at university. He was waiting in bus stops for me. It was really creepy, but also really scary. So when I'd come away from home, I'd sort of met, when I was at university, I finished off my studies, I became a qualified photographer. Came to London, started working for the Met Police as a forensic photographer, and started photographing murder scenes and seeing a crime, which was brilliant. But also I worked in a very male-dominated place. So the police force was very, very male-dominated, very sexist. And someone had sort of said to me that I was very aggressive. This is But obviously, this is what I call it. I was assertive. But to be fair, I was pretty angry growing up. I was angry as a child. I used to punch holes in walls. I never hit anybody, but I used to punch walls and throw things and smash things. I just had this internal anger. So anyway, this guy suggested that I tried kickboxing. So I started kickboxing when I was 22. So it's pretty late in life. And it was just, I just had this epiphany. It was just like this thing that happened, and I can't explain how much of a powerful effect that starting kickboxing had on me. It's just, it started to give me a place that I felt that I belonged. I was starting to feel worthy. I was starting to get my confidence. And when I mean in confidence, I'm not meaning in the fact that I could like punch someone in the face and knock them out. It was more that I had this sense of well-being. I felt that I belonged somewhere, and it was something I'd been hunting for the whole of my life. So I got quite into it. I got very obsessive over the training. I started fighting kickboxing. I had over 25 fights. I had a couple of British titles in kickboxing, so I did really well. And that was my journey. Then obviously in 98, there's a boxing promoter who had seen me fight at kickboxing. He said there's only one woman in the country, Jen Couch, who is pro. She's just turned over pro. Why don't you do it? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. Because I found this passion, this love for something that meant so much to me and had given me back so much. So I gave up my job with the Met Police as a forensic photographer. My mum and dad were disgusted in it, but that's another story.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And started to box professionally. And so I wanted to give it my all. I wanted to be the best. I wanted to be the best in the world as a boxer. So that's
cut a long story short. So it was just you two being pro boxers?
Yeah. It was me and Jen Couch. Jen Couch was the first. Her lawyers were the one that took the British Boxing Board of control. I came through straight after her. So me and Jen did the same.
So how did you prepare for that fight? Who did you spar with? Who did you train with to prepare yourself?
Well, my trainer, my first trainer, should I say, came over from kickboxing with me. And my sparring partners were men, because there was no other women then. There was nobody to spar with. And Jane, if I'd drove down to Bristol to spar with Jane, she was about 2 stone heavier than me. She was just a different weight category. And I did some stuff with her, but it's... So I found a lot of, the bantamweight, flyweight guy, male fighters, and just sort of learnt from them, really. And, they just used to throw me in the ring with everybody back in the day. But, I learnt quite a lot and give me a lot of... internal resilience.
Yeah. Is it when women spar with men, even if they're similar weight, is it different in the terms of the punch? Is it stronger, if I'm making any sense?
If I'm sparring against a man who's exactly the same weight as me and who's got exactly the same training as me, we're on the same level, 100% he's going to be stronger. Because they've got their muscular fibers are stronger through puberty, their bone density is stronger, they've got more mitochondria. So absolutely men are physically stronger than women. If we're comparing like for like, obviously if you put me against a guy who's never trained before, I'm going to, it's a sore over. Yeah. For him, so not for me.
So you're starting on a disadvantaged level from the beginning then?
I did, I looked at it in a different way. I looked at it in the fact that, like, if I can get in the ring with these guys and I'm paying them, we had to pay them, I paid them an extra £50 if they would spar with me properly, like hit me, rather than just, because a lot of guys would just be like, oh, you're a girl, let's just play about with you. I'm like, I don't want that. How am I going to learn? I'm going to go into a fight with a woman who's trying to knock.
You were paying them to hit you properly.
And also £50 is quite a lot of money. One
back in the 90s,
yeah,
it's a lot.
I mean, even now, I'm
listen, at the end of the day, I needed to get proper sparring. I'm going to go into the ring and I'm going to spar with this, I'm going to fight with this woman from all from Europe who are really highly trained. She's going to try and knock me out, which is what boxing's about. She's going to go in there, she's going to try and take my head off, not a problem with that, but I need to be prepared for that. So that's why I didn't mind. I said, if you don't spar with me properly, I'm not going to pay you. If you're just messing around with me and flick, 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 I'm not going to learn anything. So I developed such strength from sparring with guys. And so when I was fighting against the women, it was not easy by any form, because I fought with some big, really big, tough women. And but I just knew that I went in there feeling strong.
What was the perception? Because you were the beginner into this, the second woman that was in a pro fight. What was the comments of the people back then?
Oh, wow. So I had it said to me so many times that you're too pretty to box. So that was a bit boring. But, you know, you can't train in this gym. This gym's just for men. We haven't got any changing facilities for women. I'm like, it's fine, I'll change in the car. So, but they didn't know how to deal with me. And a lot of guys, especially, I'll name them as well, Frank Warren, Frank Maloney, refused to put women on. There was other promoters called Jim Evans, Duke McKenzie, they all hated women's boxing. Obviously, they've changed a lot now because they can see potential, and Frank Maloney became Kelly Maloney. So obviously there was something a bit deep-rooted there why he at the time didn't want to put on female boxing. But Jane Couch had the same. They, you know, I think Kelly Maloney or Frank Maloney at the time spat at us, called us right winger, be gooder, do gooder lesbians. Not that that's a bad thing, but that's what he was calling us. It was really bad. There were people refused. Women should not be allowed to box at all. Why would you want to box? Well, the same reason as you do, because I want to fight. There were people just couldn't, they couldn't, men especially, well, actually not just men. But yeah, my mum couldn't get her head around it. My mum and dad never came to watch me fight because they thought it was disgusting. And my family all felt the same. So to be fair, women and men alike, but obviously much more men because it was a male-dominated sport.
Yeah,
I didn't get any sponsorship whatsoever because they were like, oh, I don't want to, it might sort of do something, if something wrong happens to you, it might do something to my company. And so it was very, very difficult to sort of get any backup, any support from anybody.
And where did you... I mean, that sounds so... It sounds like an impossible task in terms of, like, I mean, it's hard enough now to decide to be an athlete as anyone and go, right, okay, this is the thing I'm going to do and this is what I'm going to pursue. Like, it's hard enough to train all the time, like, to even get to a point of, like, you know, to do really well, let alone have all of that undermining, like, negative energy. Like, how did you deal with that? How did you not go, oh,
fuck this.
I'm out. It's too hard.
Do you know, I'd sort of lived all of my life not feeling I belonged and actually always trying to prove my worth. So for me, and obviously I was in this abusive relationship and I swore I was never going to let anyone bully me like that again. Nobody's ever going to bully me and tell me or belittle me and tell me, because my ex, that sort of bad relationship, was telling me I was no good, I was ugly, I was this, I was that. And I swore I was never going to allow anyone to have that power over what I wanted to do anymore. And yes, it was really difficult because, you know, I wasn't earning any money. Like, we were myself and Jane, maybe walk out with sometimes nothing. We wouldn't earn anything from the fight because we were given the opportunity to fight on a show. So I think for me, I was just out there going, I will prove you all wrong. And actually, the more obstacles these guys would put in my way, the more it would give me the drive and determination to carry on. They go, well, if you don't sell enough tickets to fight on the show. So I found a couple of promoters, smaller ones, and they were my saviours. They were like sort of gangster shows. They were quite cool. They had their pro boxing promoter's license, but they used to put on these little gangster shows full of cigar smoke. So you're fighting through all this smoke. It was brilliant. And, you know, you just go out, you know, if you win, we'll give you a bit of £100 or something if you win. And so it became this sort of bit of a funny old lifestyle because, you know, you're mixing with all these like London gangsters and they were kind of looking after you, like not in a monetary fashion, but they'd slip you like an extra £100 if you won because, you know, you'd won them some money because they were betting on you. So I was quite lucky I had those smaller sort of guys sort of believe in me. But even my first trainer, he didn't take me seriously, which is quite a shame because My first few fights, I was set up quite badly. Then they put me in for a 10-round fight. I think I was about four fights in, 10-rounder. They were like, we've watched a fight, you're going to be fine. And I got in, first round, she come out, she was a southpaw fighter, which means you, obviously you have to fight a southpaw fighter totally different than you do another one. So I had 10 rounds with her. And I said to this guy, you're not looking after me. It's the second time you've set me up on a fight. You've put one woman in who you said she'd had four fights. She'd had 54 because she was from the Ukraine. You're not looking after me. So that's when I actually got rid of him and I went with Adam Booth. So Adam Booth was David Haye's trainer. So David Haye was my bucket man, corner man, throughout when I was up and coming. And him and Adam sort of were training me. So I was lucky that they took me on because I know a lot of trainers would refuse to train me because I was female, didn't want to be involved. You can come down and hit the bag, love. Well, thanks for that. go fuck yourself and go fuck your bag. I'm going to get a proper trainer. So I trained with Adam, and Adam was great because he had great sort of belief in me. And then a guy called Gary Logan helped me out as well. So, you know, there were a very good few eggs in the boxing world that sort of I was lucky. I still didn't get paid anything, really.
Yeah. But did you never?
How long did that take till you actually got paid?
I think my biggest payday was when I fought in Germany for the world title over 10 rounds against Regina Halmich. She's a legend in Germany. She was getting paid £500,000 to fight me, and she's never had to work since. Like, it's the same sort of stuff as that a lot of the ladies are getting paid now, which is great in the UK. But I walked out of there once I'd paid my expenses. I walked out of there, and this is my biggest payday. This was £1,000. Like, what? I'd walk out. Honest to God, I'd walk out with maybe between nothing and £200 normally. And I walked out of the Germany fight with £1,000 in my pocket. And then I had to take 2 weeks off work because I had really bad concussion. I had 9 bleeds on the brain after my Germany fight. So I had migraines. I actually couldn't go to work when I got back to the UK. So actually that was probably much gone anyway. But, you know, we fought because we loved it. We fought because we were on a mission. We fought because we did want to actually pave the way for other women. The fight was really strong within for me to be able to help other women come through. And, you know, yes, we earned nothing, but I worked full time throughout my whole career. I'm still working my ass off now. You know what I mean? I work like 7 days a week at the minute.
Oh my God.
How did you manage to work and put all this work in to get to then go in the ring? Like, how does that work?
Without burning out.
Yeah, without burning out.
Because that seems to be a thing where, like, people try and put in all this work and then they actually can't cope because it's just too much.
Right. I've got two trains of thought on that one. Yes, it was very difficult because I was working full time and I was slotting my training in amongst clients. But I had a mortgage to pay, so I had no choice. I'm from that era where you put your head down and you just get on with it. You don't moan. You don't bitch about, oh, I've got to sell this amount of tickets to get on a show. You don't go, oh, poor me, I'm not getting this. Or, I'm going to fight for nothing because I want the experience. You're not feeling sorry for yourself in any way, shape or form. So I think a lot of people nowadays feel a little bit entitled, if I'm really honest. And yes, you've got to be careful not to burn out. And I'm all about balance now because now I've burnt out. And now I had a double knee replacement at the beginning of the year and my hip needs replacing before the end of the year. And I've got adrenal fatigue. So yes, now I'm burnt out. But during the boxing, I was pretty headstrong and I was determined, you know. I didn't feel sorry for myself at all. I just thought, you know what? I need to just keep moving forward. And yes, it is really difficult, but life's difficult. Life's hard, you know. You can't expect life to be easy.
So it's more about the mindset that kept you going.
100%. 100%. I was taught from a young age that, you know, I was abandoned when I was a baby. I was taught about you've got to be independent. You've got to look after yourself because you can't rely on people. And that's my mindset always, you know, being, you know, all this lockdown palaver with people going, oh, what about the kids? So I was a kid, just, I didn't have any phones, I didn't have a computer. I was shoved upstairs in the room and told to shut up with Lego for hours. So, you know, I'm from the era where you're built that, you know, go and sit outside and shut up for an hour and we'll give you like a couple of pounds, you know, and getting the cane at school and getting the strap. Mm-hmm. And you know, so I think as I was growing up, I'd already developed this sort of inner resilience and inner fight and inner strength to not to rely on anyone else. So I knew I was there on my own. Boxing's a lonely sport. You were there on your own. You can't rely on everyone else to be, you know, wiping your forehead down when you're getting sweaty, and you have to be self-reliant. It's nice to have that team around you, yeah, but you can't be relying on people, especially with boxing, with it being such a lonely sport. That was my mindset.
Mm. We've watched your fight and we were like, what on earth? How is the other woman still standing? Like you were like a machine. Were there any times where you weren't feeling like, I'm not 100% today, how am I going to fight? Or it was out of the question because your mindset is like, I'm going to fight.
Every single fight I had before I fought, every single fight, I didn't feel good enough. Every single fight I had, I was really nervous. From the first fight I had to the last 50-odd fights I had with kickboxing and boxing, to the last fight, I was still as nervous. I still didn't feel I was good enough, 100%.
Are you serious?
You have to talk to yourself. I'm so 100%.
Really?
I was very, very anxious and nervous before every single fight because I wanted to win.
How did you talk to yourself?
I'd tell me that it's all right, you've trained hard, you know, I'd listen to music, I'd sort of walk around the room, I'd do some breathing exercises. I didn't want to talk to anyone in the room. I just wanted to be on my own because that's where I was used to being. I'm a comfortable place. and I just know that I'm going out there and I'm just going to fight strong and I'm going to fight hard, even if, you know, some days, and even in the gym when I was sparring, I was like, oh, God, I feel terrible. I'm going to get battered today. But so you train yourself during training to do that and to overcome anyone I'm training for a fight. I always try to emulate as much as I can in the gym that they're going to experience in the fight. So when they're really not feeling like training, come on, you're getting in there because this is the time where you overcome those barriers.
Yeah.
Could you tell us how does this, what's happening in boxing, can be applied in real life, how, like dealing with difficult situations?
Everything in boxing can be transferred onto life. Everything you learn from boxing, the resilience, the mindset, you know, times when you're feeling like you've really hit walls in life and you're feeling really down, it's, you know that if you've developed it in the ring or in the gym, if you're just training, you know that you've got that resource to dig into in life. Like, I haven't had life easy. Like, we've been through, my husband and me have been through 10 IVF, failed 10 IVFs. We've done 3 donor eggs. Like, over the last few years, my mum's died, my dad's died, my biological mother's died, her family's turned on me. You know, it's we've been through some hardships in the sort of last few years. But you know, if I hadn't had boxing as a digging tool for me to know that it's going to be all right, this is a really hard time for us at the minute, but I know it's going to be okay. And I think you've got to develop that resilience, and that's where boxing and sport come into massive play with people. If you can really get the kids into sport, and not about everyone's a winner palaver, it's a winner and a loser and everything, because that gets you ready for life. Whether you go for an interview or whether things, not everything works out in life. So if you're developed as a young child in sport, there is a winner and a loser in sport, and you've got to maintain that. You know, you're starting to develop resilience already there by, if things don't always go your way. If you've had everything your own way the whole of your entire life, how are you going to cope with that when you get older into adulthood, when you might not get the job interview that you've gone for, or something might not have worked out how it's supposed to? you won't have that inside you. So yeah, I think using boxing and sport from an early age really helps with that inner resilience and that inner drive.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it does. And it's really like, I think it's really positive message from it, because, you know, some people, I mean, I know that we're like, because we do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and, you know, when you lose, when, you know, we lose every day, and then, but sometimes you win. It's not the same as boxing. You don't get hit in the face. I don't know how I'd feel.
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is crazy. No, it's a brilliant sport. It's equally as respectful as boxing.
Well, yeah, you never get used to losing, but I guess you stop being put off by it. So you lose and you go, oh, bollocks, but then you just go, okay, let's try again. And it's that sort of, okay, let's try again. Okay. And I guess it's like repetition. It's like the repetition of movement, or like, you know, drills. It's like repetition. And you get so used to it, it becomes just, you don't even think about it. You just get up and start again.
It's habit forming. Go on.
You tell us. Sorry.
I was just talking about habit forming. We're going down to like neural sort of plasticity here. But if you've connected your neural patterns in your brain to be in a certain way, and you're forming habits. And it takes a long time. You don't just get it the first time going, oh, God, I've got to try again. Yeah, it's really difficult. But at least over time, you form these strong neural pathways in your brain to go, actually, now I want to keep trying. And yeah, it's disappointing that it's not going to happen. So for us, giving up IVF, for example, was one of my biggest things, because my husband was like, let's stop. And I'm like, no, let's just do this one more. And let's just try donor eggs. And then we had to pinky promise on the last one that if this last one doesn't work, we're not going to do it again. And we pinky promised, and it broke my soul, because I'd never given up on anything, and this was totally out of my control. And it took me years and years to sort of really get over the fact that we couldn't have kids. It wasn't that we couldn't have kids; it was the fact that I had to give up on something, and it wasn't in my makeup that I built over years.
Yeah, sort of going back on all of that learned behavior of just not giving up. God, no, it's amazing how you seem to live that like just resilience. It's amazing. I mean, one of our questions was, how did you deal with, I mean, being undermined? We've sort of covered that, but in terms of like being patronized throughout, you know, as you said before, like go and punch the bag, or you know, you can't, you know, not actually gonna have a fight. What was your actual response? So like, we, you know, when they said that, how did you deal with it? Because I think that even, you know, today there's still a lot of problems with that kind of behavior, maybe not in the boxing gym so much, but in just general life, like, you know, as a woman being shut down and being like, you know, not listened to, or you know, not anyway, that, how did you deal with it then, and how do you deal with it now, and what do you find works?
It's still just, it 100% is still happening now. I get shut down all the time. I hate it. People have said to me, I need to say something to someone. They'll go, all right, quick. And I'm just like, no, it's not quick. I've got something to say. And people just shoo my opinion off a lot. Even sort of like the gym, where you work, just not even in the boxing, but actually in the fitness arena, it is very much male dominated, and very much women do get patronized. Yes, it is getting better, but there was a long way to go. I get shut down a lot, and it frustrates me, because I feel like people don't take me seriously now. They didn't then. And I just think at first when I first started boxing, I would get really frustrated and really angry, and I wanted to tear the place up and smash everybody's face in. So I was really angry about it, and I would argue with people the whole time. But actually, I found it was getting me absolutely nowhere. And the more I was shouting and the more I was arguing, the less respect I was getting, and the more people were patronizing me. So actually, what I did was I discovered a way to get my point across in a calm fashion. So if I'm really angry with you, I'll say to you, actually, I need to have a talk with you. I'm actually quite annoyed with you. And these are the reasons why. But I say it very calm. I'm very stern. And that I've had a better result from. So that's how I deal with it nowadays. So if someone has upset me, I will still tell them, but not in an aggressive, angry fashion. As much as I might be very angry about it, and I still might want to smash their face in. I just know that it's to get that respect from people, you need to deal with things with calmness. And this is something that boxing has taught me. When you're fighting, if you lose your temper in that ring, you've lost the fight, full stop. Because you lose that clarity of mind. I know some of my fights, it looks like I'm a bit like wayward, but it's all planned stuff. We worked on drills. I'm not angry. I've not lost my temper. I'm still quite calm. I'm just being spiteful. And yes, I'm wanting to hit you and I'm wanting to hurt you, but I'm doing this in a calm fashion because then I can see what's coming back at me. Then my return or my counter punch or my counter speech, if I'm talking to someone, is calm. Because as soon as I lost my temper last week, funny enough, very fractionally. And I was quite annoyed at myself because I thought I'd lost control of the situation. And then I found out I'm almost apologising for myself to people because I wanted them, we were in a serious meeting, it's about this new gym, we're in a serious meeting, I need to get this serious point across. But someone was just talking over me, and I was like, stop, because obviously I've still got that inner fire. But then I felt myself go, but then I wound myself back in again and then started talking calm again. So we're human beings. We've got emotions. You're going to have anger. You're going to get anxious. You're going to get nervous. Everything. But it's just knowing if you lose it, you lose it. It's just you're a human being. But if you can keep that under control, I'm not saying sit in the corner, don't say anything. Speak your mind. That's what I say. The people who try and patronize me now, don't talk to me like that because this is how, and I'll speak really calm to them and then make them feel like an idiot. You've got much more control like that. You can, if you're shouting at them, I block off. If someone's shouting at me, I block off. So if you lose your temper, but you can still get your point across. If someone's patronizing you or me or anyone else, just sit down and talk to them and tell them, be straight, but do it in a calm manner and say, I'm not happy.
Is that difficult thing though, of being assertive and being taken to be aggressive, the amount of like, you know, if you come in and you've got an opinion, people sort of have it's the stereotype, but they immediately think you're bossy or that they think that you're speaking out of turn, and it's sort of like, it's like the person talking over you, like, if I don't know if it was a guy, but you know, if they would they have done that to you if you were a guy, and like that sort of feeling of being like constantly, it's sort of like you have to behave in a different way in order to have an impact. You can't just be like truthful. You can't just be like, no, you have to be like, oh no. You have to like constantly rearrange how you want to be in order to be seen and heard as a woman. Does that make sense?
I always say if people find me bossy, that's their issue. It's not my issue. I'm getting a point across. If I'm saying no, I'm saying no. But I'm going to give you a calm reason why I'm saying no. Sometimes you're in a difficult situation with people. I had to sack my accountant last year because he was speaking to me like a piece of shit. And I know male clients of his. And he would never even dream about speaking to them like that. So I said to him, why do you feel like you can speak to me like that? He goes, that's just the way I speak. Well, not to me, you're not going to. He went, then find yourself a new accountant. I'm like, no problem, I'll move on. Then so there's ways I won't work with people unless they take me seriously at all. Yeah. And there's certain things I will definitely put my foot down. If people say I'm bossy, my husband says I'm bossy all the time. But I'm like, things won't get done unless I'm bossy.
I love the fact that you are straight. You're gonna say what you want in a calm way, but you're gonna be honest, because many people and women in the workplace, they just go by and they don't say things that they want to say.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's, I'm so surprised. I mean, I don't know what can you tell us what it's like for you in the boxing world? Because I would assume as world champion or British and European champion and really highly ranked in your career, you would have some kind of that's my assumption, but I'm not sure if that's true.
Huge respect.
Yeah.
And people licking you.
What?
Licking you.
That's what if you put chocolate mousse on, then you can lick me.
What is the expression? Oh no!
You mean kissing their ass?
Yeah, yeah,
that's fine. One. We can people can lick me.
Up.
Fine.
That's what I
charge for that though. That's some dominatrix shit there. That's £500 an hour. Just saying.
Well, I'm translating from
and my language. No touching.
I'm directly translating from Greek, guys. I'm so sorry. Back
to the question.
So please leave that in, by the way.
This is great.
If me and my husband walk into a room of boxers, now my husband's 6'4". He's a big guy. He's a professional boxing coach, but he's not had any pro fights. If we're in a room and I'm speaking to people about boxing, they always look to him for clarity on boxing. Some people don't. There's some people who've got so much respect for me. But also nowadays, all the youngsters, they don't know who I am. Not that I'm saying, oh, don't you know who I am? But they don't. Like a lot of even the up and coming female boxers, they don't really give myself and Jane Couch that credit. So that is very frustrating for me. I do get quite upset by that because we really did fight solidly and for many years for the women to be on the stage that they're on now. So that is quite frustrating for me. I had a meeting with John Conti yesterday, who's a really old-time world champion boxer. He knew me. He's got massive respect for me. You know, I've got some of the old-time boxers, Michael Watson, so much respect for me. So I think the younger generation hasn't so much. But the older boxers who've actually, you know, Chris Eubanks Sr. and his trainer, it was quite funny. We went on a British Boxing Border Control first aid course because obviously I'm a professional licensed coach. So you have to do their first aid courses. So I'd gone into this course, obviously the only women there, walked into the room. I've said, I'm really friendly. I walk into a room, and this is the other thing about empowerment. You walk into a room, you own the room. You walk in, you say hello to everybody. Hello, walk in, good morning. I always walk into a room and I'm just like, I'm here. You know, I'm going to sit down now. Everyone ignored me. Chris Eubanks Sr. walked in with his trainer, who's Ronnie, great guy. Both of them have known me for years. They've seen me fighting years back. They were like, oh, Kathy, how are you doing? Sat next to me. So I was on the course with those two. And all of a sudden, all these other little guys who didn't want to speak to, all of a sudden wanted to be my friend. I'm like, get out of here, man. Seriously? You didn't want to talk to me a second ago, but now you can see I'm getting respect from other people, like Chris Eubanks Sr., for example. He's really good. He's always given me lots of respect. It's a changer. So I still go through it now. I walk in and people just like, yeah. But I'm quite open about it. People cut me off and I'm like, you know, if someone looks at my husband for validation, I'm like, don't look at him for validation. It's me that's talking to you. And they're like, okay, I embarrass them. So embarrass people, be calm.
Yeah.
And speak your mind.
That's what I found is like there's a lack of eye contact. If I'm with I've worked, like if you're working with someone, it's me and a guy and we're like working as a team, the person who's our boss will always talk to him. Or like, and I found it happen a couple of times and I got really upset and then I get the sort of, are you sure that's happening? Are you sure you haven't made it up? Because they wouldn't have done that. They're really nice. And you're like, but I swear that that's what's happening. But no one else saw it. But I swear that I felt that and that's what? And you get doubted and then you doubt yourself and then you don't say anything or you do, like, do you know what I mean? Like, how do you... In a weird way, it's like you're trusting your own judgment. It's you're trusting your own instincts about your being not seen in the same way.
I think we're sensitive to it because we've been through it so many times and we've experienced it over and over again. Unless someone's aware of it, they're not going to pick up on it because they're not looking for that.
That's true.
They're focused on something else. So it's not their fault if they maybe don't pick it up. They just they've not experienced how it feels to feel like a piece of shit when someone's talking to you or that no one's taking you seriously. It obviously is, you know, yes, it still happens to me now as well because I'm a Geordie. I'm very playful. So when I'm in a meeting, you know, I'm I'm not sort of, you know, being really serious the whole time. And I think that's difficult. But, you know, I think people just look at me quite differently sometimes. So, yeah.
Sorry. No,
I was just going to babble on about something. I'll just babble. If you just tell me to shut up because I'll stop. I'll go off on a wing about something else. Probably not even related.
That's all right. We're here to listen to you. I was going to ask about you mentioned one of the things that you do in the room, which really helps because you give women, we read that you do workshops like for women empowerment. What kind of thing do you talk about? What kind of issues come up and who attends? Is it for everyone or is it for boxers or who?
No, it's for everybody. And I've done quite a few. I tell my life story a little bit. I tell what I've been through. And because the reason I do that is because I want people to sort of think I'm not just standing on stage and barking orders at them of this is how you should be and you've got to be this and you've got to be that. Actually, this is what I've been through. This is how I've conquered it. So when I'm saying to you, this is how you've got to deal with it, it's because I've lived it and I know that it works. So there's a different, depends who I'm talking to. And I'll show some videos of me fighting and I'll talk about sort of boxing. I'll talk about how to transfer it over onto life. So it's for everybody because we said earlier, boxing is transferable onto everything. Mm-hmm. You know, what you learn from boxing on sport, it's really important.
Do you see, first of all, do you have a lot of women in your classes?
Boxing
classes, sorry.
Yeah, I do women-only classes. I've got two classes. They're called bitch boxing. Because the bitch was my fight in them. So that we needed something.
It?
Yeah, so they call, my name is Kathy the Bitch Brown. Some people know me as just, that's the bitch. The reason we did that was because in the 90s we needed something quite controversial because women were not, we weren't hitting the media about boxing, people weren't taking us seriously. So we decided to come up with this genius idea of calling myself the bitch. And then the media were like, who's this woman who's calling herself the bitch? So I'm like, that'll be me. Because obviously I'm really, really lovely outside the ring. And then when I'm in the ring, not so lovely. So I trademarked.
Not lovely at all. We've seen that.
So I trademarked bitch boxing. So I do bitch boxing classes, which are for women only. And that's for empowerment. And I also run boxology classes as well, which is mixed, to be honest, men and women in that one. And then it's women only. But I went to, I don't know if you know, I went to Iraq last year. I went to Iraq last year. To work with women over in Iraq. I was approached by a really beautiful woman who runs a company, a small charity called the Lotus Flower Charity. And she escaped genocide from Saddam Hussein. And she'd sort of seen how bad the Yazidi women were being treated in Iraq in 2014 when ISIS went over there and they raped and pillaged and abused these women and children over periods of time. They were gang raping all these young girls and they were killing their, like, the husbands, their brothers, their uncles. So it was just the women. So the women escaped into the mountains and they were sold and they were just being sold on by between different ISIS soldiers. So they set up this charity and eventually sort of when ISIS sort of, the government had sort of battled them out and the army got, you know, stopped it all. They all these women and the men who had survived were put into a camp in the mountains with 15,000 people there. And they all live in tents and they've lived there for the last 5 years. So the woman asked me if I would come and do a, well, she didn't ask me to go over. She just said, would you create a program for us so we can run through with the women and children called Boxing Sisters? I was like, yeah, sure. I said, but better than that, I said, I'll come over to Iraq. And she said, what do you mean? I was like, yeah, we'll come over. So I've organised us to go to Iraq. Then I told my husband afterwards that we're going to Iraq. And then he was like, what? So, what do you mean? His family weren't too happy. My family had all died last year. So I didn't have it. I've got no brothers or sisters. And I'm literally just me and my husband. So I was like, come on, let's go. So we flew to Iraq without security. We had a local driver that took us into the mountains, and we had to drive 3 hours round Mosul, because if we'd gone through Mosul, I would have got kidnapped. So, and we stayed in this camp for 8 days with these women and children, and we taught them boxing. Now, we took over not just the boxing side of it, we took over gloves and pads, but we taught three of the women, we did the boxology course with them. So we taught them education of how to coach boxing. So we spent every afternoon with three women, all the mornings with both the women and the kids. And so we spent 8 days just educating them. We had translators and we had women who couldn't read. So we were doing voice notes and Arabic and Kurdish. And we trained them up. So they're still teaching now in the camp. They're teaching. It's one of the best projects that have ever been run over there. So that every morning, like, the women were just there ready to box. So it's a really empowering for the women. And this wasn't to get them to fight ISIS at all, but it was to help them with their coping mechanisms. We had this young girl who was like 6 and 7 when she got took by ISIS, and she was raped so badly over and over again. They broke her pelvis and her back. And we were working with her, and she was really scared at first. And obviously my husband's 6'4". But by the end of the third day, she was just loving it so much. She was only wanting to partner with my husband, which was great. And we just brought so much back. It was this coping mechanism that we were giving them. We're giving them this release of the anxiety and their depression and their anger and their everything. And we created this safe space within the camp to teach them boxing. So just going back to what we were saying about women, I'm really hugely about helping women through boxing. We were supposed to go back this year, but obviously with COVID we've not been able to, and we're going to go to Nepal next year to work with all the young girls who've been trafficked with the Gurkhas on a charity called the Sustainable Himalayan Foundation. So I've set up my own charity now, which is the other thing I'm doing, called Head Guard. So we're going over to guard the head with using boxing and coping mechanisms. So we're taking over therapy and boxing together to really help women who have been a result of abuse and rape through war. So women empowerment is very much on my agenda, at the moment.
It's huge.
Yeah, so that's another thing I'm working on at the minute. We're hopefully going to get it rubber stamped by the Charities Commission in the next few weeks.
And then we'll start
planning.
That's amazing. So before that, this up till now, it hasn't been part of your charity. Your charity is something that you're just about to take off.
I worked with the Lotus Flower independently, so I raised 16,000 for them. And we do things like we did silent auction with David Hay signed gloves, and so we raised 16,000. And I literally give that all. I didn't take a penny. We give that all to the charity, and it's a small charity, so that really helped them out. It kept them running for much longer. And I took loads of pads and gloves, and I've got loads of sports equipment. I took over 4 big bags full of equipment and just give it to them. So so the Head Guard became after that, because I wanted to create an umbrella charity that we went and helped women and children who had been abused and raped. Just because I just know from what I've been through in my life and the abuse I went through when I was younger, I know the positive effect that boxing has on you and your confidence every single day, and how good you feel. You two know that as soon as you finish your Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you feel amazing. You know, you feel it's like a demon be gone moment, you know, and that's what you want to create. Yeah. And just saying, you've got a way to release your inner feelings with sport, with boxing, with BJJ, with martial arts, all of that above.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so powerful. I can't believe that.
Yeah. We want to shout a bit more about what you're doing. So please keep us posted. Every time you have something.
Yeah, send us your stuff.
Yeah, and we want to...
Yeah. I mean, it's off till next year because of COVID, unfortunately. Otherwise, we would have been going over there this year. I mean, I've got trustees now. We're going to run it from this new gym that I'm helping open up called Boxcentric, which is a gym in Knightsbridge, which is just boxing, martial arts and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. No MMA. Sorry, MMA listeners. I just want to bring that independent discipline and respect back to each martial arts as an individual thing. And so we're going to do women-only classes there, and we're going to run the charity from there. We're going to do events there, like white-collar events, etc. Get Kelly Holmes down there. Kelly Holmes is going to be working with us because she's very much about mental health and military emotion down there. We've got John Conti. We've got all sorts of people going to be helping us and be ambassadors for us down. So it's going to be hopefully it's a very, very small gym, but it's what it stands for is what we're working on. Yeah. So the charity will be run from there next year.
That sounds amazing. And I just want to touch on what you're saying about bringing the sort of individuality to the different disciplines again, away from MMA. Why do you think that's, I'm just curious, why do you think that's important?
Well, when I first started kickboxing, one of the things I really admired about the kickboxing, and I did Thai boxing for years, was actually that the respect that they have for each other, the respect they have for their coach, the respect they have for people on the street, and very much, you know, you're bowing when you walk into the dojo. And that's what martial arts was created on. If you look back at Bruce Lee, everything like that, it's about respect. It's about discipline. And it's about being kind to others. And I think, excuse me for saying this, but I think MMA has got a little bit wayward on that aspect. I know boxing's gone a bit when the press conferences happen, but that's all for show. But I'm talking about people in the gym, people who come to train boxing and martial arts in comparison to the people that come in and train MMA. They're a different crowd of people. And, you know, I'm not talking about the press conference where everyone's throwing water on each other and pretending to fight, etc. It's the crowd that it attracts and the aggression that it attracts. Yes, obviously, I am aggressive because I'll punch people in the face for living for quite a long period of my time. But I respect people massively. It's all about being humane to each other and kind to each other. You know, that it's a sport when you're in the arena, you're fighting, you're trying to knock each other out. Yes, you're trying to hurt each other. But when you come out of that, there's a respect. There's a respect before, there's respect afterwards. And there should be that across the whole board.
Yeah. That's true. And I think I've got a friend who boxes, and she said that boxers are quite calm, like outside the ring. Like they have like they're very calm. They're not ready to go. They're very chill. They've got a lot of self control, and that comes from their boxing experience.
You'll find a lot of them. Excuse me, I don't want coughing all of a sudden now. COVID. it's spread through the podcast. Turn it off. No, I'm joking. Martial arts is about that. Kickboxing is about that as well. But I was watching a documentary the other day about MMA, and so my voice has got a bit funny now. And it just goes to show how much aggression is there in the actual gym as well. I don't like it. I don't like that. I think, you know, we're on this planet to help each other. yes, you know, people might look at boxing and martial arts as an aggressive sport, but it's in the ring. But once you're outside the ring, it's that you should be a different person, you know, humble to all. You know, we get too many egos, and I don't admire that about a person. And that's why I think for us with Boxcentric and bringing this centre of excellence of martial arts in is to bring back that respect and that humbleness.
Could you tell us a little bit about all of the projects you have going on at the moment? And also tell us what Boxology exactly is.
Boxology is courses that I've produced, which breaks down the science of boxing. We've not created a fad. It's Queensbury's rules. this is why you jab and this is why you jab like this. This is why you cross. This is why you cross. I'm breaking down every single technique into a million pieces. So we've done on the jab alone, we've done like 5 separate videos of breaking each the actual movement down and why you do it. So you understand the anatomy and physiology behind the jab, what should be holding pads for jab. So it's over 300 videos of coaching, between 5 and 10 minutes long. So at the end of, you've got round one, you've got round two, I'm creating round three, which is more about combat, your sparring, etc. But round one covers that, you know, jab, cross, hook, slips, rolls, and simple footwork. Round two is uppercuts, body shots, more advanced footwork, creating classes. So that when you come out of, say you finish round one, you get 10 CPD points, it's a recognized course. You then can sort of teach clients or teach boxers safely, because I see so much bad pad work. It kills my soul. And that's what triggered me off to do it. I was seeing people just... It took me years to put together, but watching people doing pad work and actually injuring their clients because they're pushing forward on the pads, all this metology palaver. But I wanted to create something to go, this is how you should be doing pads. This is why. You don't want to injure yourself. You don't want to injure your client. You want to be looking classy. And so then I just, and also I started the project when my dad died, as my mum had really bad dementia and, she couldn't look after herself. I mean, she didn't even know who I was. So, and she'd had it for years. And I was going up and down to Newcastle every 2 weeks just to sort of, with, I had care workers going at the house and I had to make sure they had food. I was paying their bills. I was just looking after them. So when my dad died, I had to put my mum in a home, and because I'm the obviously only child. And I left her in Durham because it was nearer to the family who I thought would have visited her, but they didn't, but that's another story. And I just travelled up there. But it just broke my spirit into a million pieces when I had to put my mum into a home. And I'd still go up and visit her every 2 weeks. I'd sit with her all weekend. She didn't know who else, she didn't speak to me. But I still used to go and sit with her I went on for years. And I threw myself into boxology as a project, as a coping mechanism. So I sort of really dedicated all my train journeys up. It's a 3-hour train journey up and 3-hour train journey back. I would be typing and developing. So boxology had a double sort of meaning for me. It was a coping mechanism for me while I was going through a really tough time. We were also going through IVF and the end of IVF, and I was a bit lost. So I needed something to focus on. So boxology, I wanted to make it the best course on the market. And I wanted to make it more intricate and more detailed and more meticulous than any course out there, and which I have done. And I've put my mind, body and soul into it over the last few years. And I'm still, even now, I rewrote the book, because I wasn't 100% happy with it. So I've literally today just took the old beginner book down off Amazon and put the new one up, the round one. So the books are on Amazon. The round two I'm redoing now. I've kind of put the work in. But yeah, I want to make everything. I'm really, really OCD, so I need everything to be really, really good.
You are a doer as well. Yeah. You don't stop. And I love that. Is the book complementing the online videos, or is it a separate thing?
Right. So originally, I was just going to write it as a manual to go with the course. You get the book. When you do the course, you get the book. So round one, right, you've got a separate book. Round two, it's an even thicker book. But as I was writing it, I thought, why don't I just write it so it's a standalone book? So right. I wrote the book so you could buy the book on its own, and I've meticulously broken it down in the book. So you get it when you do the course for free anyway, but then you could buy it if you didn't want to do it. You could sort of just do that on its own. And then we've also created over lockdown a membership area where if anyone's interested in boxing, which everybody probably is, I've listened to this, we've got a membership area which you can pay at $9.99 a month for, and you get content every week. You get new content about, you know, boxing programs and combinations, and we've developed sort of different sort of skill set videos that we put onto the membership area, which I run that alongside that as well. So we've just finished shooting 100 combinations, which we've put into 50 programs. So you get the program and then you've got a link to a video so you can watch each combination about me explain about the combination.
Yeah. Wow.
Lockdown found you busy.
Yeah.
You didn't get out busy. In lockdown.
I was well, more busy in lockdown.
The next book needs to be on how to fight on the mental side because you have so much to say.
I'm on it. That's... I'm on it. 100%.
I knew it.
I'm on it. In fact, I was having a meeting with a psychotherapist this week because although I'm a qualified cognitive behavior therapist, I wanted something heavyweight behind me. I'm wanting to design my own book, which is my life story. But each chapter is about a section of my life and what I've learned from that. And then at the end of that chapter, you're going to have tools to go away with that you can, that this is how I used it. And this is forms you can fill in. So I'm giving you back my ways, my coping mechanism, and I'll give you exercises, et cetera, to do, which are based on cognitive behavior therapy. Mm. So that's my plan.
That's a very cool plan. I have a question about, because a lot of, as a fighter, you were a professional athlete and you boxed and that was your life. And then one day that ended. I'd love to know why you chose it to end at that point. And also then how did you cope with the chasm that was left? Because I feel like that is quite a common worry or a common concern for a lot of people in that kind of position.
Yeah, that was a bit of a dark time in my life. And I had neural damage in my neck and I hadn't quite reached where I wanted to be with boxing. And it was very difficult because if I was to fight for a world title, I had to fly Germany. I fought for two world titles in Germany and three different weight categories, light fly, fly and bantam. I fought in Hungary. I fought in Italy twice, all for world titles. And I got the loss, I never ever got knocked out in boxing, never hit the canvas ever, just saying. But I lost on points and it was a really difficult time because I really wanted to, I'm ranked number three in the world at flyweight, but it's not enough for me. And my physiotherapist, who's one of the world leading physiotherapists, he sees a lot of athletes. I've got so much respect for him. He'd said to me a couple of fights previously because he was having to inject me because I was in a lot of pain. I'd fought sort of, he got me through fractured pelvises, through fights. I woke up one morning, my whole groin was black. I was single at the time as well. So yeah, I was like, oh, what have I done? But it was a fractured pelvis, so it's fine. It's a hairline fracture. But I still get pain from that now. Broken hand, I fought through that, broken ribs, etc. I'd sort of always had this sort of fighter in me to fight through all of these sort of torn, in fact, my second but last fight, I had a torn calf muscle. So I couldn't push backwards. So I had to come forward, fight and just take me up and put big socks on and hide it because I would never have got the opportunity to fight again. So my physiotherapist said, if you don't stop now, Kathy, you've got really bad neural damage in your neck. I was blacking out quite a lot. He said, it's going to be irreversible. You're going to have no life after boxing. And I'd sort of said, look, I've been offered this English title, which is a British Boxing Border Control English title. Nobody's done an English title before. Let me go back and do this. Let me have this last fight. And it was a 10-rounder. So I did that last fight. And I knew that was my last fight because I knew that my health was really important to me. As much as boxing had really given me back so much. And I'd relied on it for right through kickboxing and boxing. So I was fighting for 16 years, and it was my source of strength. So when someone takes away all of your source of strength, because training wasn't the same as fighting. Training on the bag and pads is not the same. And I had to hit a really dark place, and I started to become angry with the world. I hated everybody. And I kind of still do now, to be fair. I'm not a huge, I prefer animals. I was teaching, my temper was through the roof. I didn't have the calmness about me anymore. And I was like, I need to do something because I'm in a really horrible, dark place. And I didn't know what to do. I had no one to talk to about it. Nobody was really interested in female boxing anyway, as we know. Nobody was really interested in how I felt. My mum and dad didn't care because they didn't really care about my boxing. I was single. So I had to decide what to do on my own. And obviously, quite luckily, I built this independent resilience up as growing up. So I decided to study sports psychology because I needed to understand my mind more. And then after I studied that for years, I decided that it wasn't enough. I needed some more tools to work with people. So that's when I studied cognitive behavioral therapy. So that project pulled me out of holes. And that's my go-to. When I'm having a hard time, I throw myself into projects and I develop something. What can I do? I'm going to study. So I studied, and that's how I helped myself. And then I found that I was attracting a lot of clients who needed therapy and they needed the boxing. So I was attracting a lot of people who needed me, and selfishly, I was getting a bit of a kick from that, because just say I'm training you two, you come out there and you went, Kathy, you've helped me so much. Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much this session meant to me. I'd get a massive kick out of that, because then it would give me that feeling of self-worth that I needed, that I've never had through my life. And I'm still sort of have my days where I've still got no self-worth. But helping people gives me back that. So it's a kind of two-way street on that coaching. So that's what helped me through that horrible time.
Yeah, amazing. It makes a lot of sense. I think that's it sounds like a very, very dark space to be in when I don't think there's anything comparable. If something just gets taken. What did it feel like? Did it feel like, you didn't really have a choice?
It was hell.
I was lost. I was just lost. I didn't know what to do. I just felt out of control. I just hated the world. I was in a bitter, nasty, horrible, dark place. And I didn't like that place. I didn't like that. It's almost like the old child Kathy was coming out. My little inner chimp was coming out. And I've got to take control of this. And we've always got a choice in life, you know. Shit, things are always going to happen, but it's life. Mm. Well, maybe not some. Some have got silver spoons and nothing bad happens to them. if it did, it's because they've dropped something on the floor. But real life is shit. you've got to be able to deal with these things and be able to move forward from them and understand that. You know, yes, I'm in a dark place and I have to not rely on other people to get me out of it. I've got to rely on myself to get out of it. And you've got a choice of how you get out of it. I know that when you put one foot in front of the other, like there's days now that I get out of bed. I just don't want to go out. I just don't leave the house because I just can't face people. I can't face being sociable. I can't face talking to people. But I know fine well if I just wash my face, brush my teeth, put my clothes on and just get out the door, that it's always going to be all right. It might be a hard day and I might struggle through it, but I start to lighten up as the day goes by, and then the next day is another day. And it's really important to know that there's a lot of people out there struggling. I struggle some days, but I just know that if I can't sit and feel sorry for myself because...
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I put one foot in front of the other. Even on my horriblest days, that's what I do. It's the only way forward.
Yeah, I like that. Put one foot in front of the other. Because even then, I imagine that when you're as well going into like the ring, it's like you don't, you're like, you know, you're shit scared and you're going, oh shit. And then you're just going one foot, just slowly.
I'm here now.
Leading
you do it.
Yeah, I'm here. I remember saying to my, I was fighting in Hungary for, it was a 2-week notice, 10-round fight. And it was at bantamweight, which is much heavier than I was. She was massive. And literally just as I was walking out, I said to Adam Booth, what am I doing? He went, Kathy, now's not the time for clarity. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Let's go. Come on. I was having a moment going, what am I doing? I'm fighting in front of like thousands of people. I've only had 2-week notice. She's much heavier than me. Like, seriously, Kathy? And he's like, this now's not the time. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Just get in. And once you're in, you're fighting. You've got no choice then. You've just got to put your head down and never give up. I'd never allow myself to give up in a fight. You can see some fighters when you're watching boxing, you can see when they give up. It goes in their eyes. They're like, they don't want it anymore. And my thing is, to make a good athlete, to make a good boxer, I honestly think you've had to have been through something in your life, something dark, something heavy, something deep. Because you've got to have that drive and determination from somewhere deep inside to keep you going through the hard times, do you know, when you're fighting.
Yeah. I was gonna ask, like, that is like the, that's what sort of separates someone from being a champion, isn't it? It's that moment. It's that, it's being able to not switch off when you're, when your body is that, there's like a limit that you've got, and you kind of hit that limit and you're like, no, but I'm going to keep pushing. And someone else goes, I can't. Like, what do you ever feel that? Do you feel like a limit and then you just go, no, and then you sort of feel yourself go over that summit?
All the time. It happens all the time. Even with Boxology, I'd nearly give up on it so many times during lockdown. I'm like, oh, for God's sake, I'm putting all this hard work in and it's not coming back. And so, yeah, but, you know, I'm not going to give up. When I'm fighting, it's just like, oh, my God, you know, when you're just being punched really hard in the face and just like, you're sitting back in the chair going, Kathy, you need to fix up. Come on. And you have to have a word with yourself. But, yeah, I think I always had a why to why I'm fighting. I'm whying because I'm proving everybody wrong who said I shouldn't be allowed to fight because I'm a woman. I'm proving this guy wrong who was 15, when I was 15, 16-year-old, telling me I was no good, I was worthless, I was ugly. I'm proving him wrong right now. You know, people who just tell you that you're not going to make it, people who would tell you that you're not good enough, that's my drive. I've been through that. There was horrible times where I know how it feels to feel at rock bottom, or where you feel worthless and you feel like you've got no confidence and you don't feel that you belong anywhere. It's not nice. It's a horrible place to feel. And the reason I'm saying that is that I don't want to sort of empathise with anyone who feels like that. It's 100% horrible, but you've got to dig into that and use that as your drive and your why and your determination to keep going and to never give up.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, well, I think that leads us on to our last
question, most important.
Question.
Right, Kathy Brown, Kathy the Beach Brown, what are you fighting for?
Everything. I'm fighting for everything all of the time. I'm fighting to be heard, to be understood, to be respected. But I fight for everything, constantly, daily. So, yeah, I fight for respect is my main thing.
Yeah,
and fight to feel that I belong somewhere.
Yeah, you do belong. You belong wherever you are.
We absolutely love
it. It's mad because you don't. It's not, you do. You feel, even now, I feel like I don't belong, and I just, you know, I feel very lonely a lot. This is not looking for sympathy, but I feel very lonely a lot. My husband gets really upset with me. He's like, but you've got me. I'm like, I know, but sometimes not everybody understands mental struggles or things that you've been through. And actually, I'm having a post-traumatic stress disorder moment of shit that's happened. And it's hard because unless someone can relate to you, you feel quite lonely when you're dealing with it. So I'm kind of fighting for people just to feel that they belong, I suppose, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's just brilliant.
So much sense.
Yeah, I feel like you're fighting all of our corners.
Yeah.
And you started fighting for us from
when I was six. Yeah.
That was really...
Stop, you. Did you have to finish on that? Did we have to finish on the age thing? Did we just have to go there? Did we really just have to finish there?
She's a little child. Leave her. Leave her.
She's about 80.
God, I've just turned 50 this year. Mind you, 50, I'm saying I'm 49 this year, really, because this year didn't really count, did it? So
yeah,
I'm pretending I'm 49 for another year.
I'm saying too, I'm recounting because that wasn't a proper year.
2020 doesn't count. Everyone just pauses.
I mean, for you, it did count because you did so much. We just ate.
My God, I did. Yeah, true, I did. Yeah, oh no, God. I actually was stupidly constructive. My husband said I was a nightmare to be with because I was like, what have you done today? This is what you've got to do today. This is your target. So I'm like, he was like, he went and sat in the bedroom every day. I sat in the living room because he didn't want to sit in the same room as me because he went, keep asking me what I've done. What have you done today?
Tell me, I'm
a nightmare to be around. I'm a nightmare to be around.
This is my list
of what I've done.
It's like comparing exam questions or something with someone who just really doesn't want to talk about it. Like, no.
Thank you so much for this talk.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Women Who Fight podcast.
And credit to Will Grant for being our songwriter and sound editor. Please subscribe and share and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at womenwhofight.co.uk and check out our website for more content.